We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hello, everybody. Hey, we're back. We are back here courtside on the Her Hoop Stats podcast network. I am Christy Winter-Scott, not joined as always by my guy, Gabe Ibrahim. However, shout out to Gabe, but sitting in right now for Gabe is my guy, Aaron. Aaron, he is the brain trust of Her Hoop Stats. There are so many followers over the past several years. A lot of people use Her Hoop Stats for analytics. I know I do. I know a lot of other major worldwide networks also utilize Her Hoop Stats. Aaron, listen, thank you for this platform, number one, but welcome, my friend.
Hey, thanks so much. That's way too kind. Thank you for all you do for us and for the game. It's great to be here. I was very happy to have seen you in person in Cleveland for the NCAA tournament. That was a lot of fun because it's been a while, and it's nice to see you now in digital form today.
Digital form in the boxes.
There we go.
That was awesome.
Yeah. So, a lot's gone on since the last time we heard your thoughts. I'm particularly interested to hear how you've been processing, how you've been feeling for the last, month or so. It's been such an amazing time for women's basketball. We were talking about ahead of time. I think we should probably just start with the last time I saw you, which was the NCAA tournament. I think I was one row in front of you for some amazing games, at least on Friday night. And what was your impression of Cleveland and of the experience at the Final Four overall?
I mean, I think it was the same as Dallas, right? I think when you're talking about the Final Four and just the numbers, just the sheer numbers, not just in the arenas in Dallas and in Cleveland, respectively, but the viewership numbers, right? And not just for the Final Four, but women's sports in general. I mean, you saw Iowa at Kinnick Field. I was on that game in October, right? And there were so many people, so over 55,646, if my memory serves me correctly.
Approximately.
I think that's pretty good. But I mean, it's just amazing the momentum that women's sports has right now. And I think when you are looking at the overarching numbers and respectability that the game has seen, especially in Cleveland, and then for the championship game, I was sitting right there on the court, sitting right down there. And it was insane. Like for me to, play in a Final Four back in the 1900s. Okay. But I played. And it was packed in there. So it's not like, the numbers in the arena. It wasn't like we played in front of our families and that's it. I mean, it was 14, 15, 18, 20,000 people in the arenas back in the day. So it's right. Not necessarily that, women's basketball all of a sudden has, gained this worldwide respect in a snap. Okay. This is something that has been building. And the biggest difference, and I think I've said this before too, but the biggest difference is social media. The biggest difference is these worldwide networks being able to allow fans to assess these games and not just on TV, but on their phones, on their computers, like they're overseas watching. I mean, I think that has been the full scope of this change. So it's not necessarily that the game has changed so much. I think it's always been in its pure form, mm-hmm. but I think right now what we're witnessing is players who have been inspired by the Cheryl Millers and, you know, the Cheryl Swoops and so forth of the world who are now out here performing. I mean, Maya Moore, right? Caitlin Clark's favorite player is Maya Moore. So this has been building for some time now. So let's not just think like all of a sudden, you know, because rivalries were in place that now the game is, you know, watchable. No, the game has always been watchable. You just haven't had a place to watch it. So I think that, Aaron, has been, for me, the biggest change. And that's why the needle has moved so exponentially so in terms of the viewership and not just in the arena. So I think there's a misconception that there were two people in the arena for Final Four games before the last 2 years. And that's just not the case. I mean, there have been sold out arenas. There just haven't been millions upon millions, almost 19 million viewers, okay, watching from home and every other way, streaming, etc.
Yeah, no, I think I mostly agree with you. I'm not sure, you know, I think I disagree with you a little bit. So hopefully it'll be good podcasting that we won't agree on everything. You know, from my perspective, so you've obviously been in it much longer than me and I've been in the community, been a part of women's game much longer than me. I definitely remember, though, like, I don't think of it as a steady build over time. I think that there was a peak of interest early, right? The WNBA, I think, had a lot of interest. The games weren't, when they were like on CBS, were definitely drawing more than they were. One thing I always noticed was, you know, for a number of years, we would see on this, we've been on the steady upswing for a while. Now that's certainly true. Like, you know, 4 or 5 years, it feels like, but, you know, it was always like, it's the most since 2013. It's the most since 2012, because it had been higher before. And that was something that I always wonder about is, am I in a little women's basketball bubble? And so we all see it growing and that bubble is growing a little and it feels like a lot, but in the rest of the world, it's not. I think what is different, you know, frankly, is, you know, a lot of it is the Caitlin Clark effect. It's nice to see, though, that it's not just Caitlin Clark. You know, they're getting tremendous numbers for you know, that USC, was it USC UConn game that that did really well? Like, a lot of the games had great numbers that didn't involve Caitlin as well, numbers that would have been unheard of just a few years ago. And so I think it's a quiet case of kind of, you know, lifting all boats. But, you know, to me, though, what I think is we're getting in a nice, Caitlin Clark, I think, is giving it a nice spiral. Because as you said, I 100% agree, the game's been watchable the whole time. I mean, some of the battles, both at the college level and the WNBA, some of those, like, Lynx, Sparks, you know, right, just tremendous. You know, Stewie's been amazing forever. You know, a lot has been happening. You know, there's a reason Maya Moore is Caitlin Clark's, you know, favorite player, as you said. The game's been watchable for a while. But I think what's happened is that culturally, we got this nice snowball effect where eyeballs are kind of coming in because of Caitlin Clark, honestly, right? People, in the same way that Steph Curry was a phenomenon back in the day. I don't think I'm breaking tons of new ground, but then they're getting exposed to it. And like a lot of people in a lot of different ways, you know, when they get exposed to the game, they realize it. And so what I've noticed over the last couple of years is I've gotten way more questions asked of me by like people that I know sort of outside of my women's basketball life asking me about women's basketball. And so I think that I am hopeful that it is here to stay and people are gonna be able to appreciate this great game that we love. I don't know that we're gonna draw the 18 point whatever for the championship next year without Caitlin Clark, but I think it's gonna be a lot more than it was before. But some of the charts that I saw of like, here's the ratings from like 2000 to, you know, 2024. And it's just, for all intents and purposes, flat. And then just these last 2 years, it looks like it's growing exponentially. And so I think that's really the question is, you know, how can we sustain it, right? We saw it. I think you mentioned you were watching a little WNBA on Twitter through unconventional channels last night, that preseason game. But
there's a lot of people doing that.
Yeah, there are a lot of people doing that. I think 200,000 people tuned in at least for a little while. And so, you know, the interest is there. And so I think as it's become, people talk about it more and then it becomes sort of more socially acceptable. It's just kind of on the radar in the same way, like when a new album drops or, you know, things like that. And if it, you know, makes the newspapers, people talk about it and it drums up interest. So I'm hoping that we're going to be in a place, you know, I think that a lot of the gambling stuff, right, there's obviously pros and cons to the impact of gambling, but tons of people, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to people and they're like, oh, you know, I was like looking for something to gamble on, especially in the summer when there's less going on in traditional men's sports. And so they start, you know, following the WNBA a little more closely, especially for the person gambling, then they're like, holy cow, this is an amazing sport. Why haven't I watched this all my life? And so, you know, I think we're all happy with that. You know, it's really interesting to think about what are all the other amazing things that are going on in the world that you and I aren't tuned into that, you know, they're probably clamoring for their attention as well.
Right. No doubt. And, you know, I hear you, but I'm going to, you know, humbly disagree a little bit on that. And I know the numbers and I know you're all about the, you know, her hoop stats and the analytics and the numbers and the graphics and all. But I think, just because I think I've been in it for so long, right? I think, you know, just the ability to tap in, right, to our game, that's what has changed the most. And I understand the numbers have changed because of that. So I guess we somewhat agree on that. But I think, you know, there's been a method to this madness that has happened, you know, in the best way, right? Yes, there is a Caitlin Clark effect. Yes, Juju Watkins is only going to be a sophomore She's coming into the Big Ten. So, you know, I can't wait to get her on a couple games next year. Listen, USC is going to be trouble for a lot of folks, especially with the couple transfers they got in, Kiki Efren and Efren and all the others. I just think it's going to be it's going to be fun to watch. But I think, you know, the numbers still may be able to be sustainable because of all of the other games. Like Paige Becker, she's still coming back. AZ Flood will be healthy for Connecticut. I mean, that's going to be another team that's going to be buying, right? Mm-hmm. I know, right?
Fingers crossed, yep.
I love them. And, you know, their perseverance and everything has just really been steadfast. But when you think about, you know, the sustainability of these numbers, I think, you know, you keep feeding the public what they want, right? You know,
yes.
We're parents, right? You feed your kids what they want, right? For the most part. Sometimes you're like, you're going to have this. This is all we have for today. So this is what you're going to have. But I think for the most part, what would you like to have for dinner? And they're going to tell you, and you go to the store and you get that and you feed them. So I think, you know, as a parent, you look at it that way. And I think big picture wise, you take it up. It's just a microcosm of what women's basketball viewers
yes.
want. And
exactly.
and they are presented by the big networks and the streaming devices that they've been able to tap into. So, I mean, feed them what they want is what I'm saying. And I think we've seen what the public wants. And you see these babies out there with all the signage and, you know, today's the young girls of today are the women leaders of tomorrow. And that's one of my favorite, you know, posters that I've, you know, seen over the spring and summer, and just the powerful insight that we're giving our youth. I think it cannot be understated. It can't be overstated. I think this is something that we need for our youth, something to hold on to, something to believe in, but the representation for our women and our young girls and even our young, you know, who are going to be allies as girl dads, you know, eventually, and supporting their daughters, on the same level, right? That they are being presented by dad, take me to a game, right? And that's how I fell in love with it, because of my dad watching TV and watching the games. Like that's where he was. So guess where I was? Right there with them, watching and learning and falling in love with it. So, I mean, we've heard that story over and over from so many athletes, and how they were introduced to it and how they fell in love with it. First and foremost, it's been because of the support that they've received at home. So let's continue it by giving people what they want, right? Parents. Yeah. Taking your kids to these games, taking your sons and daughters to these games, and letting them see the fierce and ferocious competitive fire in these leaders who they will one day become.
Yeah. And I mean, the making it visible, right, in so many ways is important, right? It's not just about the, you know, you talk about the boys or whatever. It's not just about the girl dads, but it's also about like helping the boys see, you know, they might be managed by these women someday too, right? And being comfortable and just sort of seeing them as peers. You know, I think your food analogy is pretty amusing, right? Parents of the world unite on this podcast. You know, I guess, yeah, but to me, the analogy, it's on level, right? It's like when you've got like an elementary schooler and you give them sushi for the first time and they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then suddenly they're eating sushi all the time. And that's kind of what's happened, right? And, you know, you talk about the networks. I think that in particular, one thing that was really nice that I personally enjoyed this year were the Fox broadcast with Gus Johnson on them. And Fox really leaned into it, I thought. They sort of realized they had a phenomenon and put him on, you know, as Richard Deitch would say, Big Fox. And I know he's, you know, Richard has been really, you know, banging the drum to try to, you know, he was a leader in asking ABC to put the championship game on ABC on Sunday. And we've had that for the past couple of years, I think. And so, you know, now the next question is, can we get the Final Four as well, right? The men are on CBS typically. Obviously, they got that weird contract with, it's not that weird, but split contract with, TNT, TBS, but in the same way, I think just more opportunities for people to watch, whether it's on Fox, you know, in the middle of the week or on the weekend, and, you know, giving it the prominence that it deserves.
For sure. You know, I think that's what it needs, right? I know back in the day, I mean, we played on ESPN, but not every tournament game was on ESPN when I was playing at Maryland. It was only, I think the Sweet 16 on through to the championship was on ESPN. So I think, you know, the game has grown, and you have to, like coaches today, you know, like parents today, I mean, everyone has to kind of roll with the punches and understand what the reality of this moment is, and do your due diligence to fuel that so that the next jump could be even higher, right, for the game. And I think that's what we're seeing. I think we're seeing the belief, we're seeing the money, we're seeing all of the support that we've been, I don't want to say begging for, but we've been waiting for it. And I think we've been commanding it. And I'm going to go ahead and change the narrative of take the begging out. We've been commanding that you bet on women. And now you've done that and you're winning, right? Everybody wins when you bet on women. And I think that's what we've seen change. There's been confidence boosted on both sides of it because of the investment in our women.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. So yeah, so it's been really nice to see this moment, right? And I think, you know, the game's trying to figure out how to capitalize on the opportunities. WNBA is trying to figure out how to capitalize it. Media outlets like HoopStats and, you know, the bigger ones as well are trying to figure out how to kind of continue to grow and serve the women's basketball community even more. So, you know, it's an exciting time to be part of women's basketball. I'm really proud to, you know, be a member of the community and so glad that, you know, I mean, we're coming up on, you know, our 7-year anniversary. I think we're at 6.5 years of HoopStats. So it's, you know, really kind of amazing when you step back and reflect, to say nothing of, you know, people that have been, you know, part of this game for, you know, in the NCAA, like 4 decades, right? So
crazy. That's awesome though. But I think, you know, that's what it's going to take, you know, that kind of leverage and traction, but the belief. I think you have to have faith and you have to believe. Those are two major key cogs in my daily mantras, right? Have faith and believe in your work. And I think that's what we've seen resonate throughout our game.
Yeah, the way I think of it, right, is, you know, when people join our team, I always say, like, we have to do stuff that we think that is interesting and trust that there are other people that will think it's interesting too. So that's part of why we have all these podcasts. So your takeaway more about sort of the impact of the cultural aspects, for lack of a better word, of the Final Four? Or, you know, how much was your takeaway about Dawn Staley in South Carolina, the basketball he saw on the court?
Oh man, it was all about that. It's always going to be all about that for me, first and foremost. Yes, the numbers were immaculate vibes. We understand that. But look at what Dawn Staley has been able to do, right? The last 2 years in particular. I mean, only losing, what, 3 games in 2 seasons? Or 3, I think. I saw it was 100 and something in 3. Was it 3 seasons? But, I mean, today's Dawn's birthday, by the way. So happy birthday to my dog, Dawn. That's my girl. But I think the way that she has led that team, and the fact that she said when they lost in the Final Four last season, with Aaliyah Boston being a senior and going undefeated all the way up until the semis last year, losing to Iowa, who went on to eventually lose to LSU in the title game in 2023, Dawn Staley said, listen, I was going to walk away from the game. And I think that's when you saw the emotion from Dawn bubble over in the post-game congratulatory interview, where she couldn't come up with the words. She was just caught up with all of the tears. And that moment, that spoke to me, because there is more to it than what you see in the moment. And I think that's what that displayed for me. And you can't, you know, well, you can learn, number one thing, you can learn from not getting what you want when you want it, right? And the only way that you can learn is to keep going, even if it hurts so bad. She wanted it so badly. You understand, they went undefeated all the way through. Do you understand how bad she wanted that championship in 2023 for those kids? And then she felt like, as the leader of that group, felt like she had failed them. There's nothing worse than that. I don't care. Like, I coached for a long time. And the wins and losses, I only remember the losses because I felt like that's on me. Like, and even if the players didn't execute to the best of their ability, I still feel, you know, as a coach, responsible for the losses, right? Kids, they did the winning, right? That's all on them. When the team wins, it's all the kids. When the team loses, it's all me as a coach, right? And I think that's what you saw with Dawn. But the fact that she said, you know what, I'm going to pull my bootstraps up and come back and do it again. Not only did she do it again by going undefeated, but she got to that same point in the semis and got the job done for her kids. And then you had Raven Johnson, who also said, I almost gave up the game because she was so in her emotions about how 2023 went for her individually. So I understand that from an athletic viewpoint as a player as well. Like, man, I got to get that right. I can't shoot 23% from 3. I got to get my butt in the gym. But was that hard for her to do? Absolutely. Did she have moments of doubt? Like, should I even play this game? But did she play the game or what? So those are things like the skill level. Yes. Just amazing. All the games. But when you know the backstories of the emotion of who these people are in these moments, that speaks to me every time. And because I've lived it on both sides. So I understand, you know, what it takes emotionally to be right in those moments. And so to see Raven push through, and not just push through, but succeed, to see Dawn push through, and not just push through, Aaron, but achieve and succeed the highest level in college basketball is winning a national championship. And Dawn went 3 times as a player at Virginia and did not win, but she has gone 3 times as a coach and has come up with the ring. So she's got 3 netlesses. That's what she calls it, netless, not necklace, but netless. She has 3 of those bad boys. And I couldn't be more proud of her and the way that her team came out and performed in spite of, right, what happened in 2023. So there's so many life lessons in sports, which is why I love it. Even more so than X's and O's and analytics, it's about the emotion and passion behind what coaches and players go through and what they accomplish together as a unified group. And that will always be the utmost for me.
Yeah, no, it's such an impressive year for the team to respond after the way last season had ended. And yeah, just really remarkable. I never cease to be amazed by what Dawn Staley accomplishes and really just how she conducts herself, right? How much she's thinking about the game. She's, you know, I think really trying to uplift other Black women coaches. And, you know, like on the coaching side, right, I thought it was particularly impressive how, you know, the team had, transformed this year compared to last year in style play personnel and were able to maintain that standard, right? They were not the number one ranked team in the preseason, right? But they definitely finished that way.
Right. And how soon did that change, right? And then they kept it for the rest of the year. I know maybe the first week they weren't. And then after that, yeah, no, they're number one. They're number one. Who's going to beat them? And I think, you know, we were talking about that in the fall, like who's going to beat South Carolina? And I think I told Gabe Ibrahim, I said, you know, the LA Sparks, because I don't know anybody in college. Man, like they were just a well-oiled machine, and to have all five starters graduate and then come back with a new group, come on, man. And yeah, we don't talk about that enough. And okay, the numbers were what they were, but I think it's also, can they win it this time? This is why people tuned in as well. Like, they're undefeated. Can they stay at the top of the mountain? Can they keep the crown on their heads, right? And win it all from day one.
And last year's a reminder how hard it is to do that, right? I mean, they looked like they had been anointed last year and didn't work out when all was said and done, right? Nothing's guaranteed in life.
That's why I'm telling you, it's a life lesson. It's a microcosm. And I think every kid that I coach will come back and say, life lesson was in my vernacular probably every single day. You know, like, a rebound's not going to fall to you. You got to go get it. That's a life lesson. You got to go get things. You know, that's how I just tried to manage to get it through to them, make it a tangible example. But you know, they see now, if they're not playing now, they understand, you know, what the big picture was that I personally was trying to mentor them to see. And hopefully, you know, if they're watching this, I love y'all. Hopefully you'll learn something.
So that's interesting. Is life lesson, if they were doing an imitation of you behind the scenes, that they definitely say the word life lesson as part of their imitation or not?
They would definitely do that. I've seen them do imitations of me currently. It's pretty funny. I obviously wear my heels all the time. So they would march and then squat down with the heels on, because I was an assistant for a long time, Aaron. And so I just felt like I was always trying to see around the head coach. I didn't want our staff to have me in the way. So I always squat down with my heels on, and I'd be, you know, demonstratively, you know, cheering them on. So yeah, I've seen and heard some.
Yeah. Do you have any other catchphrases that they would use?
Tapping here, I've heard happen. I've heard that a vein somehow is on the right side that comes out if I'm overdone. those were the days. But I miss coaching a lot. But yeah, they had some summer camp is usually when the imitations came out.
Tapping between your eyebrows, huh? That's interesting for those of you listening. Huh?
Simple, like we had two turnovers in a row, I would kind of close my eyes and be like having a whole woosah. Okay, can't do that, you know. But yeah,
very I don't have funny. My moment. I will say, when I first started as part of her Hoopstats, paying attention to women's basketball again, the whole like coaches squatting in heels thing, like as an old white guy, like, or middle-aged white guy, I like to say I'm not old yet. It just amazes me, right? I mean, I think of Muffin McGraw. I always thought was the queen of that. Like, I don't know who you think is the world's best kind of at squatting on the sideline in the heels.
I don't know. For me, it wasn't necessarily something that I was doing to, you know, imitate Muffin or anything. She had been an assistant and was in the way. I have to ask her next time I see her. But yeah, for me, it was just like, man, I'm in everybody's way. And yeah, I didn't want to sit down on the bench because the way my DNA and my nerves are set up, I never sat down. So I was not Phil Jackson-esque when it came to sitting and just whistling or something. I was very animated in a positive way most times. You know, it was fun.
Get your own custom chair like Phil Jackson. Now, that's pretty funny. Well, I feel like we're doing a little walk through memory lane here because so much has happened. So after the tournament was the draft. Did you watch the draft from home, or were you there?
I wish I was there, man, to see those dreams come true. What? No, I watched though every second of that draft. And it was just amazing to me because not only, you know, just watching it for the WNBA aspect of it, but, you know, having covered Caitlin Clark since her freshman year at Iowa, when she led the country in scoring with 27 a game as a freshman. So it's not like she just popped on the scene, for those of you just joining women's basketball. No, she's been doing this. She's been doing this all along. You know, she's not new to it. She's true to it. But to see her walk up on that stage, I mean, I don't talk to her every day. You know, that's not my, I don't text her every day or anything.
And Wright Thompson aren't on a group chat with her?
Touche. But for me, I think, you know, there's a sense of pride, right? When you have followed and covered teams, you've been in their practices, their shoot arounds, you've seen them at the tournaments, the Big Ten tournaments over the years, and then you see them walk up on the stage as the number one pick. I mean, last year you saw Diamond Miller walk up the number two pick for Minnesota. You know, just players that you've been following and studying and investing and watching play, and then you see their dreams come true real time. I mean, there's nothing like that. I don't care. And it's not, I mean, you know, again, we're parents, and it almost feels like that kind of connection. Like, you're just so proud, right, of them individually, but you're proud in that moment also of the game. So it's like, I called coaching like my fourth child, right? I have three kids, but I call coaching my fourth child, because there's a personal emotional investment in wanting them to be encouraged, wanting them to do well, wanting them to understand, to have peace in the process, right? And how you've seen that just develop in them, and the maturation process as competitive women, leaders, and all that. Just to see that, to me, will always be the epitome of special, in my estimation and in my mind. So that's what the game gives you, right? Those kind of relationships. And I know with the NIL and transfer portal and all that, it's all transactional now. It is not much a connection emotionally. But for me, if you know me as you do, it will always be an emotional, passionate connection with players who are like-minded in terms of their love of the game. And I know when people have it, and I know when they don't. I know when they're all about the team, and I know when they're not. For the most part, sometimes it takes me a minute, but then I'm like, oh no, that's not what bought in players do. Right. So I think to see all those kids walk up on the stage and their families surrounding them, and to know their backstories, you know, to what got them there, whether they've come through injuries, whether they've transferred and then finally found a spot for them that fits. I mean, it's just beautiful to see. And that'll always mean the most to me. So yes, I was watching that whole night, smiling ear to ear. My face was sore. I was just like with joy.
Gotta work out those face muscles, the smiling muscles.
It's a real thing. My face was sore that night. But I'm thrilled for them to continue to grow the game. I'm thrilled for the babies who are going to be at the games, the elementary age kids, the girls who are going to be inspired, like Caitlin Clark was inspired by Maya Moore and running out to get her autograph when she was 10 years old. So now they're 10 year olds running up to her in the same way. So to me, it's like that whole grandiose, like just full on portrait of what our game is and can continue to become.
Exactly. Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't put a little sound effect in. I don't have the podcast producing skills, but Circle of Life on in the background. But it feels a little bit like a graduation aspect analogy too there, right? You're sort of proud to see kind of them kind of completing one step of their journey, but also knowing that, right, they've got an exciting, proverbial next chapter ahead of them. And so it's fun to see them at the start and kind of knowing what they're capable of. It was really cool to see. Also, it was nice to see, you know, it felt like the WNBA really did it right this year. You know, they were at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, I think, right? The venue was super, just looked great on TV. And I definitely, we had a couple people there and, you know, had the sense that they really kind of did it up and had an even bigger feel than it did last year, where they were also kind of working hard on that. And so, it was nice to see it well done. Nice to see the, again, the viewership interest. It was kind of fascinating to me, though. This was also a year where, like, the draft, like the order of the draft was, you know, not so shocking. We didn't have any, I felt, super duper surprises in the first round. I don't know if there was anything that caught your eye about the actual picks themselves. Like, were you surprised Cardoso went third ahead of Rekia Jackson, or?
Not really. I think, you know, when you're looking at what Chicago needed and wanted, they wanted to bolster their front line. And they did that, obviously, with resets at the seventh pick. But I think, you know, I wasn't surprised. Rekia Jackson's going to be great in LA. I think she's going to be fantastic alongside Cam. I mean, they're going to be a dynamic duo, too. So I think every team got what they wanted in terms of what they already had, right? It's a puzzle, right? You got to make sure it's not just, you know, it's not just the best player at that position. It's the best player for your team at that draft spot, right? So I think that's what, you know, if there are any discrepancies or concerns, I think you have to look at what those war rooms look like and what they already have, you know, on their rosters and what their biggest need is. So I think they, you know, with Chicago, they need to bolster up their boards. And, you know, you heard Cardozo say, nobody's going to out-rebound us. I can tell you that right now with Angel Reese in there. I think Reese had 13-9 in the opening game, in the preseason game. So I think it's going to be really fun to watch them continue to grow in the game too. But no, I didn't really have, you know, any surprises at all. I think, and I wasn't even surprised, and not even, Kate Martin was surprised she got drafted, but I wasn't. And I think Kate Martin from Iowa was surprised that she went. She was there to cheer on Caitlin Clark, who went number one overall, of course, out of Iowa. But, you know, when Kate Martin's name was called, she was like, wait, what? I'm here. And I thought that was the cutest thing. Once again, knowing her over the years of her career at Iowa, it was the cutest little thing. And they're definitely sisters. She's going to be a fantastic player in the league. I'm hoping she sticks. It's hard to stick in the league. Listen, I don't care what round. I mean, we've seen top not make it right in the league. So it's tough, but I hope she makes it. And if not, listen, she's going to be a fantastic coach. She wants to coach Aaron, and she will be so great with that. And she's had a great mentor with that, Lisa Bluter.
A woman after your own heart, right? Wants to be a coach.
But she, you know, as I'm telling you, I can feel it in these people, man. When they have that level of love and investment, passion for the game. And, you know, so Kate Martin was surprised. I wasn't surprised about her.
Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see whether she is able to stick on opening day or not. Right. But I mean, that just because it doesn't happen this year doesn't mean it won't necessarily happen in the future. Right. Jaylen Brown, right. Yesterday for Dallas. I think she had 21, right?
She did. Her lefty was going, man. She was hitting threes, but she just looked so solid. Also defensively, like, her shots were very fluid. Her body looked great in terms of her rhythm and cadence, running and doing everything she needed to do. But bounce was good. I don't know. I was just really pleased with her, but her knee injury was pretty catastrophic. I mean, it was bad. So it was ACL meniscus. And I think I heard them say Ron Thulin on the call last night that it was also, there was an artery that was pinched or something in her leg as well. So it was like a myriad of things that she had to come back from and get right. So, you know, to see her out there performing, no, it's not over with. I mean, it's a setback, but, you know, it sets you up for a great comeback. And that's what we saw last night with her.
Oh, yeah. Was that also a coaching phrase of yours? Setback sets you up for a comeback?
I mean, I have a whole bevy of, you know, little hashtaggy kind of things. Absolutely. Oh,
we ought to, like, have end each podcast with a Christy Winter Scott inspirational phrase of the day.
I should do that. I have, you know what? Write them down, because sometimes they just come in and out, you know, pop in my head, get trapped in my spirit, and I got to let it out. So I'll have to come up with.
Really, what you got to do is ask your kids and see what they roll their eyes. And I'm sure they'll come up with it in no trouble. There's no problem at all.
They definitely know.
Cool. So after the draft, you know, I think a lot of the news was probably around the portal more than anything, right? And I, you know, we've definitely, people have listened to this podcast for a while, and I think know your thoughts about the portal. I assume they haven't changed too much, but it is a new era. So I'm curious, kind of your take on all the portal craziness we've had.
Listen, you know, Aaron, I'm all for the portal when it comes to, and I've said this before, coaching changes, right? Or if there's a mass exodus of players who are there that you thought you'd be playing with. I get it. Okay. I remember, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago, Syracuse lost all but one player on the women's side. I think the LSU men lost all their players, you know, a couple of years ago.
Oh, right. Yeah. Was Cardozo one of the Syracuse players? I think she might have been, right?
Cardozo? Yeah.
Yeah. She was one of them, right? Yeah.
But I'm just like, you know what I'm saying? In those drastic circumstances, man, put your name back in the hat and find another place. Because that's tough. Because the one thing that you can control is your hard work and your effort, right? Within your skill set. And yes, you want to build on that and develop it and stack days. I get it. But if there's a coaching change and that coach likes different kinds of players, yeah, that to me, like, I'm not going to say, hey, stay there and play through that. You know, you decided, so stay. No, I have a little bit of a window of grace that I say, you know what? That's a tough spot for a competitor. Right? That's not what you signed up for. Now everything's changed. The whole team is gone. You thought you were going to play with. That's a different look as well. But if it's just, I'm going for the money bag, I can't, man. And saying, kids, don't take that money. Because if I go retroactively, you know, go get an NIL bag, I'm taking the bag too. Yeah. But I'm not going solely for that, right? And to me, it's always going to be about relationships. Like, my kids have gone through the recruiting process. One is currently in it. So it's not going to be, you know, who's going to hand him the biggest money bag? No. Yeah. Who has my son's and my daughter's best interest at heart in terms of who they can become as people first, period. And if money comes alongside on the B, you know, you have 1A, 1B. Okay. Your 1A, 1B is develop as a young person, develop as a player. And then second would be whatever kind of support you have there for all the athletes. If he or she is eligible for that, then by all means, there it is. But that's never going to trump being a better person or a better player for me and for my kids. So I think they've heard me say it enough. They understand that. That's a team game. They understand, you know, the way of the world right now is different, that it is transactional, but it doesn't mean that they have to buy into that aspect of it and not meet the coaches and the people who they're going to live with, their teammates, right, for 4 years. You're not going to put that by the wayside and say, forget about the people and go straight for the money. And we've seen players who that has hurt a lot, right? And okay, Haley Van Litt. I mean, it's been widely discussed. I heard Gilbert Arenas talking about it on his podcast, right?
Oh, I missed that. Yeah.
Oh man, he was preaching on there, the same what I'm saying. Okay, you know, she was like, you know, I covered them when they went to the Final Four. I had them in the third, fourth rounds when they advanced to the Final Four. Van Litt was a sophomore. Okay,
in Louisville.
Yeah. Hot out killer, Aaron, a killer, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
Kobe came to see her play before he passed away. Rest in peace, Kobe. But and that's what I'm saying. Like-minded competitors respect like-minded competitors. He wouldn't have gone to see her play if she wasn't built the same way. Trust and believe. Okay. So, and Sabrina Ionescu, he went to see her too. So let's understand this. Okay. Just kind of give you a foundational understanding of how she's made up. And I don't know her. I mean, I interviewed her a couple times. I don't talk to Haley Van Litt. I don't know her, you know, but I've seen her play and I've interviewed her a couple times and the interactions, like, she is true to the game and loves it, period. I was shocked that she left Louisville, like many, right? Mm-hmm. Went to LSU and everyone's like, man, she's over in the corner, demonstratively wide open. Shots are taken. She doesn't get a touch, like several possessions at a time, and head goes back, arms down. Mm-hmm. Body was like, man, am I ever going to get a touch? And not to shoot it, but can I catch a pass in the quarter court? And, you know, and sometimes it just didn't happen. I mean, there's a lot going on. And they're a great team. I'm not saying anything badly about LSU. It's just, like I was saying about the draft, right? It's got to be a good fit, right? Exactly. Skill set wise. And eventually, I mean, she had some moments. So I'm not saying it was like all bad. But the fact that she's leaving again, right, to go to TCU, which is great for her, and they're going to be great. You know,
great for them. Yeah.
There's some pieces, but I'm like, man, you can't run from yourself and you can't run to the money. Those are the two things that I don't like about the portal. If someone says, hey, you need to get a left hand, I need to work on my left hand. If I left Maryland because my coach told me work on your left hand and I go to school B, and guess what that coach is going to tell me? You got to work on your left hand. And I leave there and the next coach, Coach C, tells me you got to work on your left hand. Where am I going besides getting my butt in the gym, working my freaking left hand? Like, yeah. At some point, it's up to you if that's what it is. Okay. So let's just understand. I'll always be an advocate for players being where they are needed most, right? Skill set wise, but also where they need most, right? In terms of how they're going to be developed as people, period. So you've seen it work out well, and you've also seen it be a dumpster fire. So, you know, all the best to everyone who decides to go that route and for whatever reasons they deem, you know, is their purpose. But I mean, I have my opinion. I'm allowed to have that opinion.
You're allowed to have that opinion. Absolutely right. I think the key is the long-term thinking, not the short-term thinking. Like you said, I think that, you got to go somewhere that you want to be. I think I lean a little more towards letting the players move around, right? And people that are not players and are, you know, just students, not student athletes, right? Can transfer, right? So I think there's no reason to necessarily limit the student athletes to less flexibility than that. And, you know, certainly I think things did not work out as Haley Manlith had hoped. And, you know, so I think it's actually not so bad for her to transfer again, if it maybe it's a better spot. Hopefully she has kind of gotten a better sense about how to pick a place that will fit for her, and it'll work out for her, right? There'd be nothing I think that you or I would enjoy more than seeing her continue to play well. But, you know, I'm more than happy to have, you know, the players transfer. I just think that, you know, I've been fortunate that I haven't had to make a lot of decisions based, you know, purely on the money, right? You want it to be something where you're earning enough, right, in your career, say, right. But it might not be the most, but maybe it's developing. And, you know, it's the same thing as the draft players, right? Angel Reese was drafted, you know, seventh, right? So, you know, Nafisa Collier was sixth, and, you know, that didn't define her as the sixth best player in her class her entire career. She took advantage of her opportunities and, you know, clearly moved up the ranks. And so, you know, that could be a case where, you know, it's sort of a somewhat analogous situation. You know, do your best, kind of find the spot that's going to fit you and where you can kind of excel. It's not just about today, but it's about kind of the long term of your career.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And all the best. That's what I'm saying. Like, if that's your avenue you have chosen for yourself, all the best for you and your success, right? But my opinion of it is not changing, man. I'm 10 toes down on that. I can't. I'm standing on business when it comes to that. You know, and I'm always going to be, I mean, people say it's maybe old school, whatever, but it's genuine. And, you know, I'm intentional about how I feel about the game, the integrity of the game, the integrity of the relationships formed through the game. And I want it to be long lasting, right? For my own birthed children, I want it to be that way. So why would I want anything different for other people? I want them to have great experiences for themselves and not run to the money or run to what they deem could be more opportunities to shoot, because it might not be it.
Yeah, exactly. I think we got to change your Twitter bio now. Christy Winter Scott, old school, genuine.
Hashtag.
There you go. There you go. Speaking of players, I don't know if you would call her old school or not. Certainly genuine. Candace Parker, what are your thoughts on her retirement? Like, what went through your head when you saw that news come across the proverbial wires?
First of all, I'm gonna start crying because she is, I don't know, like, I saw Candace in Cleveland. We were at the Threads and together had a party, and man, everybody was in there. It felt like a dream. It was so much fun because I don't go out, you know.
Not everybody, but
Dallas. You know, I was in Dallas. I was like, man, when was the last time I was outside like this? And I was like, hey, last year in the Final Four. That's crazy. But I was there. The Wings had a party in Dallas at the Final Four, and that was Lieberman was there. It was fun. But this little get together, you know, Sue Bird was there, Megan Rapinoe, the whole crew, everybody. But Candace Parker, I was like, they were taking pictures and you walk in, you know, they had the little background thing. And I see Candace outside walking in. And I'm like, no way, right? I was so excited. And I was thrilled because not only for me, you know, I get excited because, you know, I feel like we're, you know, like-minded in terms of the love of the game and all of what I just said before. But she has been like a real time, I don't want to say mentor without knowing it, but I'm going to say a mentor without realizing it for my kids. So every summer, you know, when my babies were little, they were always Candace Parker, Candace Parker, Candace Parker, Candace Parker. Jordan, who was 17, right? When he was 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, would, oh my God, I have to, when is LA coming? I have to watch Candace. They were running out to warm up. He's high-fiving the Sparks when they're coming out, right? And I have this picture and he turns and looks at me like, oh my God. Like, you know, he's having his moments. But now he wears, since last year, right? He changed his AAU jersey number to number 3 because of Candace Parker.
Really?
Right? Because she could do everything. That's what I've asked him. At first I was like, oh, you like Candace because she reminds you of me? And he's like, no. Well, that's just great. But he said, because she can do everything on the floor, right? And I think that's what she has done on and off the floor. She can do everything. I remember covering her with the Sparks when she had just had her first baby, Layla, and she was in the carrier. We were out in LA. I was covering for the Mystics. They had shooting practice after LA, and she's carrying her baby with her gear on. She's carrying her baby in the little car seat thing. You know how heavy those things used to be once you couldn't, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my God, those things would be tough on the shoulders. But she's coming out of the gym holding the baby. And I remember talking to her, really, she probably doesn't even remember it. But I'm just like, look at you, mommy. Like, you're doing it. Like, how do you do? Like, I've had kids. There's no way. She came back as a rookie, right? And won Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same season. And then has a baby and comes back and makes multiple all-star teams. Like, I mean, the list goes on and on. But for me, when I first saw it, which was the question, I'm just like, you know, just retroactively remembering all the things. But I think when I first saw it, I was a bit shocked because I don't want her to stop playing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, when Michael Jordan stopped playing, I wanted to stop. You know what I mean? I want to keep playing. Magic said, no, I'm done. You know, all the great ones, you just never want them to leave because their impact is so immense. So for me, I think from what she said about how she's in mourning, I'm in mourning too. Like, I'm going to make a post, and I told her this, I'm going to make a post about her just to let the world know. I've already told her a million times. I've given her flowers every time I've seen her. But I'm going to make a post eventually here in the next week or so. And I'm just going to pour it all out. But I just think, you know, she has just done so much to live in her 100 or 1000, 2000% truth. She is who she is. She's going to come out regardless and give you her best. And I think, you know, for my kids to want to emulate that part of who she is, I'm all for that. I'm all for that. She's just been a fantastic example of doing it her way and what she wants to do and how she has wanted to do it. She's never boxed in on the block. You know, she expanded her game to face up and be a unicorn, one of those unicorn players that was inspired players like Aaliyah Boston, who was in tears, you know, when they won the title and gave Candace a shout out in the crowd because of how impactful she has been to her. So just to know all the lives that she's touched in the way that she has internationally as well, but for sure at Tennessee and WNBA, USA Basketball, this goes on and on. But now as a commentator, when she's telling Shaq, get the surprise out of your voice, Shaq, and stuff like that. I mean, she's like, this is what I need, and I'm going to let you know it. And I think everyone can learn from that. But for me, man, I'm just glad I saw her. I'm glad I, you know, shared some time with her. You know, she didn't obviously say anything about her retirement in Cleveland, but I was glad to spend that time with her and just talk about everything, right? I mean, we sat there that night and took some pictures and were silly, and it was just a great time just to be in her same space because of the energy she possesses in such a genuine form. It's not lost on me how special her life is going to continue to be because of everything that she has experienced. I'm expecting another baby. You know, she's going to be a mom of 3. So we have that in common now coming up soon too. But I just think that she's just special. And man, I, you know, I'm surprised the tears haven't like just popped out of my eyes. Like, I just can't say enough positive things about her. But I will say that, you know, my son Jordan, who is an ultimate fan of Candace, and he's already said in the papers and everything that it's Kevin Durant and Candace Parker that he's kind of meshed together in his mind of what he wants to be as a player. But for him to say, like, why did she choose to step away? Why did she retire? Like, she's not going to get to play Angel Reese. Like, you know, like all the things, you know, so he's kind of in a grieving moment too, asking all the whys and why did that happen? But, you know, she knew in her heart that it was time to step away. So you have to respect it. And that's what I told him. But I can always pull up YouTube and watch her play when you miss her actions and activity. But and she'll be on the tube. She's going to do a lot of other things for the communities that we need. So she's not going to be gone, but she's not going to be hooping, which is the sad thing, but understandable and respectable. But at the same time, man, oh, Candace, you know, I love you, girl. And it's always going to be love for me to you. And she's already told me, you know, that she can't wait to continue to cheer on my kids. So, of course, that's going to make me
fun.
Wow. So you can go ahead now. Like, I'm done. But I can go on. Candace. Oh, the tear. There's the tear I was calling for. So, good.
Yeah. I mean, I can't, I don't think I could really add much to that. I mean, yeah, for me, it certainly was a surprise. I thought she would have wanted to kind of have another go at it with the aces. It seemed like a great setup. And even if you're not playing perhaps as much or, you know, not up to the level that she expects of herself, like I would still think it would be an enjoyable experience. But I mean, you know, she clearly has her reasons, clearly, you know, I mean, you talk about the being in mourning, but I think to make a decision like this, you also have to be at peace with it, right? So, I think that she definitely, you know, wish her all the best. She seems like such an amazing person. I have not had the privilege of kind of interacting with her in the way you have. And so I think it is a surprise. I probably have a little bit of regret, frankly, that I didn't watch her as much as you have over the years. I certainly, which I have, of course, have been watching her a lot lately. And yeah, I think she just conducts herself so well, right? I mean, there's, you always say sort of, you know, be careful when you meet your heroes or whatever, but like everything that you hear about her, everything I know about her seems just amazing. She's like a special person. And, you know, as you said, really a mentor, I would say even a role model, right? For people like Jordan, people, you know, our youth today.
Many, but yeah, no, by far. And she's one of those, I mean, I could put Grant Hill in that same number, like you know, the people who you want to meet and realize that, wow, this person is genuine. This person is exactly who I thought they would be. No surprises there in terms of character, no surprises there in terms of genuine, I don't know, compassion for people. And yeah. She's one of the special ones. One of one, Candace Parker. Yeah,
exactly. So yeah, like I said, I'm just looking forward to seeing her continue to be a part of the community and still kind of someone that we hear from and get the thoughts of, whether it's on the NBA side, WNBA, broadcast, college broadcasting. I think the world is her oyster, right?
Yeah, no, she does everything. And she said she's going to be doing a lot of investing in the community as well, which I'd love. You know, who much is given, much is expected, but that's not from the outside world. Like, she's saying that to herself. So who much is given? She understands what she's been given by the game. You know, much is expected. So she's saying that to herself, not like me telling her to who much is given and much is expected. No, she has that in her, right? She doesn't need anybody to put that on her. She's coming with that. So that's what makes her so beautiful, inside and out. She understands the assignment. She understands that her reach and impact goes much further than her ability to hoop, which was incredible. But she's going to have long reaching tentacles for a long time in the game in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. You can't tell the story of women's basketball without Candace Parker. That is for certain. So you mentioned one of her amazing accomplishments, right, is that she was Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same season. There's obviously been a lot of talk, as we've mentioned, about Caitlin Clark being a rookie. And sort of, it's been, I think, one thing I didn't really mention with the draft, right? I've been enjoying seeing some of the banter. I mean, I think some of it's kind of media created around how the vets perceive her and really, I think, the entire rookie class to some degree. But I've been definitely enjoying that.
Yeah, oh, it's been fun, right? I mean, Diana Taurasi is like, hey, when you get here, it's not going to be the same, you know, show as college. But I mean, 5 threes later in that preseason game, and some of them, she was doing the dance, Aaron, and the step back. I thought she got tagged on the one coming to the left, which she loves to do. But she got a little mid-range shot off too. I just think she was making great reads, as we knew. Yeah. She, right? A 9-assist a game last season to lead the country along with those 30 points. I mean, that's just like such a maximum level, as you know, with her hoop stats and the analytics of it, what she brings to the court for her team. I mean, she was producing almost 50 points a game for her team.
That's crazy.
It was over half of the points she was bringing to the floor, whether she's scoring or initiating offense through her teammates. So I just think it's great, right? I think it's great for the league. I think you saw it with Wemby coming in, right? It's like, Wemby's so thin and all this and that, all these things, all these knocks and all that, but he still managed. I know the team didn't do very well, but they're going to keep building around Wemby and San Antonio. But I think for Caitlin Clark, it's like the same thing. Like, oh, she's so thin defensively. She's not going to be able to do anything, like blah, 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 blah. She's not going to get those same shots off. She is. And does she know she needs to get stronger? She has said that. So that's not lost on her, what she needs to do to become the best pro that she can be. But we saw that with players coming into the league, you know, whether it's WNBA or NBA, their rookie years are different than their fourth and fifth years in the league physically, because they understand what they have to do to maintain their strength, to gain strength, but the ability to, you know, counter their strengths in terms of getting their shots off. So you're going to see her continue to evolve. That's just how she is made up mentally and competitively and passionately. So I love that everyone has a lot to say. And she doesn't have anything to say about it, but she has her game to speak for her so far. It's only been one preseason game. I get it. But her game was nice and loud in that game, Aaron.
It was. So what I wanted to ask you, right? So one thing that we launched, we sort of gave a little intro to it last week and coming out starting on Monday, is our new Ranking the W initiative. So we're going to have, you know, a series of articles coming out. We kind of polled over 100 media members, you know, a lot of different people in a lot of different aspects of the media, international as well, basically asking people how to rank players this season based on their total contribution. So first I'll ask you about Caitlin Clark. I'm like, where do you think she's going to come in? Do you think she's going to be a, you know, she could win Rookie of the Year? Do you think she could be number one? Do you think she could be, you know, a top 10 player, essentially make all WNBA this season, all-star? Like, kind of how good a player do you think she's going to be this season?
I think sky's the limit for her, for sure. In Indiana, you know, with who she has around her too, with Leah Boston, yeah. Activity, I think you're going to see that continue to ascend. But do I think she could be an all-star this year? Absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and just say yes to that. Could she be top 50? Absolutely. I'm going to say yes to that. And it's not necessarily because she's going to have gaudy numbers in terms of what she's averaging point-wise. I think it's going to be because she makes everyone around her better. And I heard Lynn Dunn say as much in their media day for the Fever. Lynn Dunn, the general manager who has spent decades in the game, right, in all aspects as GM, as coach, as coach of college, you know, what is she with Kentucky? She was a consultant with Kentucky women's team. So, I mean, she has seen the gamut, right, of what this game has become, right? And so to hear her say that Caitlin Clark makes everyone around her better, that's why she's going to be an all-star. That's why she's going to be top 10. That's why she's going to be definitely top 50, definitely top 20, top 10 as a rookie.
So you see her as maybe one of the 10 to 20 rankings, somewhere between 10th and 20th this season, kind of where you would sort of vote her if you really, really rank everybody 1 to 50, one by one.
And that's just everybody included, from Taurasi, you know, being the one that's the longest tenured to.
Not overall, but just like who, we'll get to your top three, which I think is the next question. But yeah, right. We can jump into that right now if you want. But essentially, like, do you think she can make all NBA this season, you know, second team or first? And, you know, essentially have been one of the top 10 players in the league for 2024 when we look back in, you know, in the end of September or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. I think she could definitely be. At least, and there are 10 players on each team, right? For the WNBA, for the first
team. It's like five, and first team is five, second team is five. It's not like the Big Ten, you know, all conference teams or whatever.
Damn it. Oh, that's tough. I mean, I want her to be. I would say yes to that. Even if that's just 10 players, that's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, but it's not. I mean, I'm just thinking of all of the players in the league. I don't want it, man. Those are my babies too.
I think it's going to be tough too, right? I mean, which is, but part of the point is, like, Candace, it's so amazing that she was able to do that her rookie year.
Right. That's what I'm saying. But Candace played for 16 years. So now you have players who have been in the league, you know, 19 years to Rossi, right? But then you have 15-year players.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying overall, though. I'm just talking about this upcoming season.
Right. But I'm saying, like, I can't take any of them off those top two WNBA teams and put in an easy manner. That's what I'm saying. Like, there are players who have been in the league 10 years, right, who are currently playing, who I'm thinking, okay, that's an all-league player, but who do I take off? I think that's the bigger question is.
Yeah, I won't ask you if you're going to put her top 10, who's coming in 10, 11 through 20 behind her. But what I will ask you is, do you think the top three this season are going to be the same kind of consensus top three last season of Alyssa Thomas, Brianna Stewart, and Asia Wilson?
Oh, man. I mean, I think you have to go with, you know, Asia, right? I had her as MVP last year.
Did you?
I did. I had her number one. I don't know who had her fourth. I think they're still trying to figure that out. But I mean, Asia Wilson, man, I think she is just, she understands it. I mean, her team has won back-to-back titles with her being the key cog to that formula. And I just don't think she gets enough respect, to be honest. And yes, she has pieces around her, but you look at all the great championship teams, they all had great pieces around them too. So don't use that as a negative for her. You're supposed to have pieces around you. You're not out there doing it by yourself. But like I said about Caitlin Clark, is she making other players better? Asia Wilson makes players better as well, even though she's doing it as a post player or an interior player. You don't say post anymore because golly, got big. But as an interior player, I mean, she makes that team go and she makes them better, right? With her sheer presence on the court. So I just don't think she gets enough respect. I don't think she gets talked about enough. You know, we're talking about someone who has pretty much done everything in the game as well, right? From winning a collegiate championship, now back-to-back titles in the WNBA, but also, you know, USA basketball, she's won gold medal, right? MVP of the league, she's done that too before. I just think that, you know, it's time to give her flowers and an MVP. So my preseason MVP is Asia Wilson. And that's no slight to Brianna Stewart. Stewie, I love her. She was at that party too in Cleveland. So we were on the Papa Shot. She crushed me anyway. It's another story. Is she one of the GOATs? Absolutely. When I say one of, it's not like there's one GOAT. For me, it's like, you know, it's like a cornucopia. That's what I always say of different, well, like different kinds of GOATs. Like, you're a GOAT in that role that you play for your team. But are you the all-time GOAT? You know, there's so many. Like Diana Taurasi, man, you're the all-time GOAT. Maya Moore, man, you're an all-time GOAT.
Maya Moore, yeah.
Annis Parker, you're an all-time GOAT. Like, I can't take it away. That's the same thing I was saying about the top 10. You got a top five and a top, you know, those top five in the first team and then the next five. Mm. Who am I taking off of this list too as being a GOAT? Like, no. But for me, it's right now, it's Asia Wilson, period. It was last year. And I'm not shy about saying that wasn't me that voted her as the fourth best player in the league. And it's not me right now. It is not me right now. I'm going to say that right now. I'm standing on business with that too. And 10 toes with that statement. But Breanna Stewart, yes, I think New York can be a problem once again this year with the players she has around her as well as who mm-hmm. has around her. But Alyssa Thomas is another player who I don't think gets enough love either because, you know, obviously, you know, she does everything for her team. Obviously, with Stephanie White there, who has just been a tremendous conductor for that squad and putting them in successful places on the court to really be a great team. I think they're going to sneak up on some people because no one's talking about Connecticut yet again. Why not? You didn't talk about them.
And disrespect.
He's right. He's well equipped to be an MVP caliber player this year. So I agree with your top three. But my order is Wilson first.
Asia, then. Yeah. I wasn't saying that was mine necessarily. Right. But so your order is Wilson, then Stewart, then Thomas. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I thought okay. We were about it, Aaron. I thought we were.
Yeah. Now, I will say, unfortunately, for the sake of this podcast, I actually agree with you. I think that is my top three as well in that same order. I mean, I was presuming that you would have them as the top three since they were the three top vote getters. Yeah, I didn't think you were the mystery Asia fourth voter. But yeah, so we're going to be counting down. One thing I think it's fun about this project that we're doing is that, you know, we go a little deeper than just the top five or top 10. It's really the top 50. And so, you know, it's going to be fun to see it come out over the course of next week. So if you're listening here, I'd encourage you to make sure you're following along, subscribe to our newsletter. So yeah, with that, I think, you know, you talked about a little bit. Do you have any thoughts about the preseason games before we go? The most recent one, we're recording this on Saturday afternoon, so the Canada game has not happened. The Mystics, I think, lost by 3 today to the Dream, I think, that I see.
I think it was 2. I think it was 3. But yeah.
Okay. It was 3. 87 Atlanta, 84 Mystics.
Oh yeah. I was on the post-game presser with Eric Thibault on that one. Mm. And, you know, I was at their practice on Friday yesterday. And, you know, what he wanted to see was their ability to close the paint. And I think he thought they had done a good job with that in the postgame comments that he made on the Zoom. But I think he was saying that, you know, with Atlanta being one of the top teams, getting to the free throw line and also attacking the paint, also with pace last season, those are some things that he really wanted to see about his team. He wanted to learn about the Mystics in that way, what they could take away. And I thought he said they did a good job, just 30 points in the paint, I believe, or less than 30 points in the paint. And he liked the fact that they were able to turn them over a lot and score points off turnovers. I think they had an advantage through the first half anyway with that. I think it was 5-2 and points off turnovers for the Mystics in the first half. But Aisha Hines-Allen led the team at 13. Thought that she did a really good job as well. But, you know, the balance. Ariel Atkins is also a person on the interview as well. And she was just talking about, you know, them continuing to develop their personality as a team and as a unit. Eric Thibault said, you know, there were 10 players who – play double figure minutes in this game. And I think that's what you're trying to find out. You want to know different combinations, and that's what preseason games are all about. So they have Minnesota on Wednesday here in DC, and that's going to be a great game, a morning game, 11:30 at ESA. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be fun to continue to see. It seems like they always play Minnesota. I think they have a really good relationship with Cheryl Reeve, who's the head coach with the Lynx. So I think that'll be another great game. You know, they're going to throw a lot of monkey wrenches at you. You got to be able to respond and be quick with how you can defend. But another game, you know, a lot of games went on last night, too. We saw Chicago, Minnesota, speaking of Minnesota. Minnesota got the best of the Sky. But, I mean, I think getting eyes on these rookies and seeing how they adapt themselves, right, I think is really beautiful to watch. But, of course, all eyes were on Caitlin Clark and on the app, for the WNBA app, and watching them play last night in their game in Dallas. And I just thought Arike Ogunbowale was just so flat out cold, and I was screaming. And their NBA playoff game's going on, but I'm watching this sold out Aaron preseason game in Dallas, where it came down to a shot that Arike Ogunbowale had to dance for, right? She was on Dancing with the Stars like 4 or 5 years ago.
So yeah, exactly. It's like step back. You know, I've heard of a step back shot before, right?
Man. But Clark, you know, she knocked in 5-3. So, I mean, she made her first shot. So that was something that was really fun to see. Obviously stepping to her left, pulling a triple, but she knocked in 5 of them, and they were all well defended. So it was a fun game. So I think the preseason games kind of had a real feel of midseason form for a lot of teams, and, you know, tough, close losses for some groups. But I think you learn a lot about your team in those moments. But, you know, roster cuts are going to be tough. They're going to be
tough. They always are, yeah.
you saw the Mystics play 10 players double figure minutes because trying to give everybody an opportunity to compete real time.
And no one more than 20, I noticed.
Right. But I think, that's what you have to do. So sometimes you I don't want to say, I'm not going to say it that way because that's going to come out wrong. But sometimes it's about, trying to find the right formula, trying to look at different groups. And if you win, that's great, right? If you win the game. So these games, are for understanding a little bit more about your group and what they can bring you as the season unfolds or not, right? So that's what we're seeing in these preseason games. But it's really fun to watch ultimately, though.
Yeah, it's fun. But I mean, I am definitely... team, like, you can't draw too many conclusions from the preseason. I think for a lot of different reasons, you talked about the minutes, a lot of different people are playing, for the vets, right? They're playing to get experience, right? But they're not super fired up. So I tend to be less concerned about it perhaps than most. But I did watch a bit of that Dallas game. I guess the other kind of prognostication, right? Yeah. So you mentioned Caitlin Clark had 21 points. You think she's gonna average 21 points for the season, or 20 points for the season? Only five players did that last year.
I think so. And I think, she got a little foul trouble. So, she didn't play for a chunk of, I think it was the fourth quarter, right? The beginning of the fourth, she didn't play a whole lot. I think she's going to be on the floor a lot more during the regular season. I mean, she barely came off the floor for Iowa. So, she's in great condition.
but it's different. I think that one thing that struck me, I, as a basketball nerd, really enjoy watching her passing, sort of as you referred to. The step bats are exciting and bring a lot of eyeballs, but I enjoy that. It is interesting, though, how many more minutes Indiana played their top players than, again, Washington and even Atlanta, I think, in that game as well. Because, Melissa Smith played, 33 minutes last night.
For sure. Yeah. And I think, with Clark, if she plays five more minutes, is she going, can she get over 25 again? I think she can. I mean, and this is with being defended very well. It's not like she's out there taking wide, standstill shots, locked leg shots. Like, she's had to work for all those buckets.
Yeah, and that's true.
Everybody knows who she is. Stop playing with her.
But I think one thing that struck me also was that it was interesting to watch her sort of just not be the focus of the offense the entire time. Unlike Iowa, she's she just sort of dominated the whole experience, right? There were plenty of possessions that I saw where she was kind of in a corner or something like that. And, it was going through other people, I thought. So that's going to be interesting to watch this season as well.
Yeah. And those dimes, like you said, those assist numbers, man, she lulls you to sleep and she makes you decide on what she needs for you to do. Like, I need you to do this, so this is my action. And then she drops this perfectly placed pass. It's masterful. She's a maestro at it. She gets it. It's from her soccer background, she said, where she understands the angles and where her teammates are going to be. So yeah, those passes are going to be great. And again, what Lynn Dunn said, she's going to make other people better and set them up for success. So it's going to be fun to watch her, but I think she's going to definitely score more than 20 a game moving forward. She's going to get more minutes, going to take a couple more shots. I say, I'm going to go ahead and go with 24 a game for her. Let's mark it in circle.
We got to remember that one. I think I'll be reminding you of that at the end of the season. I would take the under on 24. That's for sure. Not particularly based on a lot of analysis, but that's my initial gut reaction to it. And so tonight is going to be the Canada game, which was an amazing sight last year. It is on League Pass. I'm not sure that I'll be able to get the podcast actually published before it. So I'm sure people want to listen by then. But are you going to be able to watch, you think, the Canada game, or are you tied up tonight?
Oh, no, I'm watching that. I'll be flipping back and forth. I'm going to have that on my computer, but I'm going to have the Minnesota-Denver NBA Game 1 on as well on the TV. And then I'm going to have WNBA Toronto or Canada game on my computer.
Yeah, basketball is basketball. You're a fan of all forms, right?
Oh, hoops. I love it. I'll be watching.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's an exciting time to be a basketball fan, that's for sure. So, yeah, I think we covered a lot of ground today. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Anything you wanted to get off your chest or let the world know? Like I said, it's been a while since we chatted.
Oh man, no, I'm just, just soaking up everything. I have my WNBA sweatshirt on, my hoodie on today at the farmer's market. I'm just loving life right now. It's all hoops all the time. But again, what makes my spirit really happy is that the game has finally turned the corner in terms of respectability. After so long, I'm just trying to ring that bell, man. That'll always be something that is special to me and will always resonate with my soul and with my heart, man, because I love the game so much. And it's never going to be lost on me what the game can bring out of people, bring to people, and bring forward for the people who watch. So it's just a lot of fun for me to see the galvanizing spirit around women's basketball and how everyone is calling for equality even more so now because they see that, the work is being done. So I love it. I love it. My spirit is being
yeah, exactly. Well, it seems like, basketball's been very, very good to you. Maybe you get that Billy Crystal reference or not. But speaking of which, right, this is your 15th season calling Mystics games. Is that right?
It doesn't even feel like it, but I guess so. Yeah, Jordan was two. I had him on my hip walking into a game.
Wow.
Right. There's this, I have to show you a picture. I'll find it. Where I'm, carrying him in on my left hip. I had my bag and, I was going to go sit down, put the headsets on. He was a baby,
Okay. We'll look for that on social media. So you start again. You're calling that game on Tuesday. Really, it's the first game of the regular season, I see. Liberty at Mystics, Tuesday at 7 p.m. on League Pass.
It's on Monumental on as well. But it'll be on League Pass as well. But it'll be on Monumental in the D.C. area.
Right.
So Mid-Atlantic area. So, yeah.
It'll hard to believe. It's like 10 days away, I guess, right? It's the 4th right now. So.
Yeah. And Minnesota comes in on the 8th for that morning game. So that'll be fun just to get eyes on. You know, I was watching, you know, from someone's stream, you know, someone streamed it on Twitter, yes, watching the game today too. But last night they streamed the Chicago Minnesota game. So I think I had, like you said, 200,000 people watching it. Hey, with the pixelated iPhone, it worked pretty well. I was watching it. So, you know, we'll see what happens on Wednesday. I might do that, you know, if it's not being streamed. my phone up anyway.
Women's basketball fans have learned to be very resourceful over the years. That's for sure.
I might go live. You know what, Aaron? I might go live on Wednesday. Don't tempt me.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Cool. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Christy. And a lot of fun catching up with you and chatting. And I look forward to the next time we have you on the podcast. So I would encourage everybody, keep subscribing to the podcast, both, on YouTube and or on, you know, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts in audio only format. That tends to be how I listen to our podcast. Make sure you give us 5 stars. And then, I've been working hard on the programming side for, adding some new features that I'm hoping we'll be able to get out for the season. And then we got a lot of, so you subscribe to the stat site, and then don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter as well. So we got a lot of great content coming, including that Ranking the W, series that's going to be out this upcoming week. So thanks a lot, everybody. And we'll have a great weekend and enjoy the preseason.
Yeah. Love, love, love. See you guys next time.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic, but today work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.